Welcome to Soundprint. I'm Lisa Simeone. In the summer of 1793, a strange and deadly disease spread through Philadelphia. It started with fever and chills. If people started to vomit a terrifying black fluid, it was a sign that they were doomed. Thousands died. George Washington fled the city. The disease was yellow fever, caused by a virus that had come to Philadelphia with refugees from the West Indies. There was something curious and frighteningly random about how this disease spread. Nurses who touched patients every day did not catch the disease, but others, farther away, did get sick. Some people blamed filth in the city streets or bad air. It took more than a century before the riddle was solved. The virus was spread by a kind of mosquito that had arrived with those refugees from the West Indies. When winter arrived, the mosquitoes died, and the epidemic ended. Around the world, mosquitoes are still spreading disease. Dengue fever, for instance, is growing more common in many parts of Asia, Africa, Latin America, the Caribbean. There are even some isolated but persistent cases popping up in the Florida Keys. In case you're worried, though, it's not a problem in the rest of the country. One of the front lines in the battle to stop mosquitoes lies in the biggest city in the world that you cannot get to by car. It's Iquitos, on the banks of the Amazon River in Peru. Producer Dan Charles traveled there for today's program, which is called Mosquitoes in Iquitos.
Iquitos is an urban island in the middle of a vast forest. 400,000 people live here, surrounded by Amazonia and by three rivers, the Nanay, the Itaya, and the Amazon. One broad riverbank serves as a landing point for barges. Tony Navarro, who grew up here and drives a motorcycle taxi, says it's the city's most important link to the outside world.
We don't have any roads, so we depend on the river. For example, over there you'll see people are bringing in some cement. That's for Iquitos, but they have to bring it in from somewhere else. You can see over there, there are some big vans. They're bringing in the vans. Everything is brought in this way. Everything is brought in by river.
As we stand there in the bright sunlight, I notice we're casting almost no shadows. The sun is directly overhead. Iquitos is only a few hundred miles from the equator, hot and humid all year round. In the city's regional hospital, a massive concrete structure, there's no air conditioning, so the windows stay open to let the breezes through. Walking through the halls, you can hear crickets in the park outside. On this evening, the place is calm, but there are fresh memories of a more desperate time just a few weeks earlier when a wave of sickness washed through. The doctor in charge of treating tropical diseases, Cesar Ramal, says over the course of 2 months, almost 1,000 feverish patients arrived. They lay in extra beds that filled the hospital's stairwells and lined the hallways.
And most of them severely ill. Every patient could die, was in risk. Today.
They'd been struck down by the virus that causes dengue fever. Most of the time, dengue is not so bad, nothing worse than a bad case of the flu. But sometimes, for reasons that are still a bit of a mystery, it can turn into something much worse, dengue hemorrhagic fever. That's what these patients had. They were losing blood internally and at risk of going into shock. Their vital signs had to be monitored constantly. Some were brought here to the hospital's intensive care unit. Another doctor here, Stalin Vilca Romero, says at the height of the epidemic, he barely had time to go home.
I remember my wife, oh, are you going to live in the hospital? But this is the work, no?
You feel like you saved a lot of lives?
Yeah, many lives.
Vilca Romero takes me to another room where a young man is resting. This patient's dengue infection set off another illness, a paralyzing neurological condition. He spent weeks on a respirator.
Now, finally, he's leaving the intensive care unit. Now he's in this area that because he's recovering slowly, but he's one of the survivors.
Can you tell me your name?
Javier Arbildo Garcia.
Did you know it was dengue? Did you know what it was?
Well, I had my tests done and they came out positive.
Y salieron positivo.
Do you have any idea where you might have gotten it?
No, no tengo idea. Porque de un momento,
no, I have no idea. It just suddenly hit me.
Me pareció la enfermedad.
The man's answer made me wonder, If the source of this disease still is surrounded by mystery, the way it was with yellow fever in Philadelphia 2 centuries ago. We step into the hallway, and I turn to one of the people who's showing me around the hospital. Her name is Amy Morrison, and she's an expert on dengue fever and the mosquitoes that spread it.
When he says, "I have no idea where I got it," people do know that mosquitoes carry it, no?
People do seem to indicate they understand it's transmitted by a mosquito. I don't think people always associate it with these container breeding mosquitoes in their homes.
What brought Amy Morrison to Iquitos was the quest to better understand how a specific kind of mosquito, Aedes aegypti, spreads dengue, and the search for better ways to stop it. Morrison is in charge of a whole team of researchers who've turned the city into a giant open-air dengue laboratory.
So this is our little outdoor insectary.
Amy Morrison has two official titles. She's field director for the Mosquito Research Laboratory of the University of California, Davis. She also works for the U.S. Navy. She's director of Iquitos Operations for Naval Medical Research Unit Number 6. But those titles don't quite capture her. Most North American scientists or naval officers come to Iquitos for a few years and leave again. Morrison arrived 12 years ago, and she may just stay here forever. She's thrown herself into this world with the enthusiasm of a born adventurer and made it her own.
I'm sorry. Hello? Hola, Daisy. ¿Cómo estás?
When her cell phone rings, it could be the Navy, or it could be her Peruvian goddaughter.
No, no hay problema. Okay, chao, chao. Bye-bye.
School is starting, so one of my madrina duties tends to be, school supplies and uniforms and so forth. So,
Morrison grew up in Southern California. She thought she wanted to be a doctor, maybe helping people in poor communities where there isn't good medical care.
I mean, I think I had very naive aspirations, perhaps, when I wanted to be a physician.
You were an idealist?
I was. Fully admit it, I was.
The doctor career path turned out to be a little too rocky. Morrison wandered down a side trail into public health and took some classes on the infectious diseases of the tropics.
I loved tropical diseases and interesting parasitic diseases from, I think, the minute I was exposed to it.
In 1984, when she was studying at UCLA's School of Public Health, the school's insect laboratory started investigating mosquitoes in the marshes near the city.
We would go down once a week and set up a tent and put different kinds of traps out in the marsh and then collect mosquitoes from dusk to dawn. And then we'd pile everything back into the vehicle and drive back to UCLA and take a shower in the locker room, and then I would sit down at the scope and pull ovaries out of mosquitoes.
This is the life for me, she thought, and it's been a big part of her life ever since. She signed up with the Peace Corps and went to Honduras, not sure what she'd do there. As luck would have it, she stumbled into a research project dissecting more mosquitoes. And 2 days a week, she was a health educator in her small village outside Tegucigalpa.
Which was also fabulous experience. It's where I learned to knock on doors and say, hi, I'm a Peace Corps volunteer.
20-some years later, she's still knocking on doors. It's a big part of the work in Iquitos. Almost every morning, a team of about a dozen young men goes door to door through some part of the city. The men wear gray t-shirts with a picture of a mosquito on the back and the words Proyecto Dengue, Dengue Project. This is the mosquito team. They've been doing this for more than a decade. Two by two, the men knock on doors. The people who answer don't seem surprised. Most of them invite the mosquito hunters in. Amy Morrison and I come along. The inside of the house has makeshift walls of rough wooden planks. There are piles of clothing here and there.
This is really a good example of kind of ideal resting site. The clothes behind under beds.
One member of the mosquito team, Fernando Espinosa, starts poking around in dark corners with a small device like a miniature vacuum cleaner. It sucks up insects and traps them in a wire mesh cage. Fernando's partner, Juan Luis Cifuentes, is looking around the small courtyard in back of the house, taking notes on a clipboard. He's counting all the places where the people here might store water, either accidentally or on purpose. A pile of plastic bottles, an old toilet, a few buckets, and plastic basins for washing clothes. But these are all places where mosquitoes might breed. Cifuentes asks one of the women in the house some questions.
He's asking her about how often she has water. And what she was saying is they have it the morning, but they don't, starting about 6 in the evening, it's gone till the rest of the evening, which is very typical. But I've certainly experienced in my 12 years here, the urgency to save water is going down a little bit. But it used to be you would come in and people would have 12 or 13 buckets lined up under the roof eaves to
really?
Collect water. Yeah. And you don't see that quite as much as you used to.
In 10 minutes or so, we're done and on to the next house. And here, the mosquito hunters find exactly what they're looking for.
Entonces, ¿qué has encontrado?
Se ha encontrado larvas. Son criaderos.
So this container, you can hardly see them. If you look really, really closely, you can see first, second instar larvae.
In the dirty water in this bucket, there are some tiny specks. To me, they just look like bits of dirt.
I'd probably miss it too.
Where did we find it?
So they found this bucket in the bathroom. In a baño, no?
Sí,
a baño.
Costado del baño.
Mm-hmm.
Solean su ropa y incluso tiene el techo, tiene bequera donde la
bequera. Okay, so what he was explaining was that it was precisely under a location where there's a roof leak, unmanaged, in the sense that, you know, it's just there collecting water.
Stuck to the sides of the bucket, there are more specks, tiny mosquito eggs.
If this is something that was left for a while, a bucket like this can produce hundreds of pupae if unattended.
The larvae are too small for us to know for sure, but chances are this is the kind of mosquito that spreads dengue fever, Aedes aegypti.
What's fascinating to me about aegypti is it's probably the mosquito vector most closely associated with human beings and the most adapted to human beings.
Aedes aegypti is a kind of unwelcome house pet. No other mosquito species is quite so comfortable laying its eggs inside people's homes, and it loves the city. It's almost never found out in the forest or even in the tiny villages that line the rivers of the Amazon.
Aegypti will lay her eggs in anything that holds water, I think, in a household. Buckets, tanks, their tires, Tupperware containers.
And she has a particular taste for blood. Most mosquitoes living outside feed daily on the nectar that they find in the flowers of plants and only grab a blood meal when they're ready to make eggs. But Aedes aegypti is looking for a meal of blood anytime. That's one reason why this mosquito is so good at spreading dengue, but it's not the only reason. You see, a mosquito does not infect people with a virus just by biting them.
I'm not the first one to say this. Mosquitoes are not flying syringes.
Before a mosquito can infect a person, it has to be infected itself, and that's not as simple as it sounds. First, a mosquito, always a female, lands on someone who already carries the dengue virus and slides a slender drinking tube through the skin into a blood vessel.
And then once the mosquito has imbibed the blood, the virus needs to pass through the gut wall, and there are specific receptors at the molecular level that facilitate this.
The virus multiplies inside the cells of the insect's gut and migrates into her salivary gland using another set of receptors or microscopic gateways. The whole process takes a week or more.
And then once in the salivary glands, then at that point, they would be injected into the next host during the feeding process through the saliva.
Only a few mosquitoes have the receptors that allow dengue to infect them. And of those mosquitoes, it's really Aedes aegypti that lives with people and spreads this disease. So no Aedes aegypti, no dengue fever outbreaks. Now, here's the surprising thing. Aedes aegypti and dengue fever haven't always been in Peru. Half a century ago, scientists unleashed chemical insecticides on this insect and managed to eradicate it from much of Latin America. By the late 1970s, Aedes aegypti was gone from Iquitos. It was gone from all of Peru. For years, no one in this country got dengue. But the mosquito survived in other places, like Venezuela, not too far away. And it came back, It resurfaced in Peru in the late 1980s.
And it was first detected in Iquitos. That was the first place that the reinvasion or reemergence of Aedes aegypti was detected.
A few years later, the dengue virus returned, too. There are four different strains of this virus. One by one, they came back to Iquitos and spread, each one causing a new outbreak. The U.S. Navy's medical research unit already had a laboratory in Iquitos studying tropical viruses, so it had a front-row seat on the invasion. It's become one of the world's biggest centers of research on dengue fever.
En esta muestra tenemos culex, dos, un macho y tres hembras.
Back in Iquitos, the mosquito team is done for the day. Their leader, Elvio Astete, is taking the mosquitoes they collected and sorting them by species under a microscope. The insects are stiff. They've just spent the last hour in a freezer.
He's got three species. He's going to show you the Aedes aegypti up there on the screen. It's a beautiful mosquito. I say it's the one of the prettier ones. It's dark black. It's got you can see the white coloring, and it's usually on the abdomen, and then usually the legs are white and black banded.
All this information, how many mosquitoes they found in each house, what species, how many water containers there were and what kind, how many people live there and their social circumstances, it all gets entered into a database. The information is organized by location. Amy Morrison shows me a map of the city. This is a special map. It's like a gateway to information. We zoom in on the neighborhood that the mosquito team visited just that morning. Each house is outlined, a small rectangle.
So we were right here, this block, here.
So every one of those little squares will have a series of records of what you found when you were in that house.
Yes. So everything is linked through this location code.
And it's not just information about the mosquitoes. The dengue team also has been keeping track of what's going on with the people. Who got sick with dengue? When? Researchers check in regularly with thousands of people in certain neighborhoods.
Most people are happy to have somebody look for mosquitoes. And most are willing to have you ask about febrile illness.
And the thing they're least interested in is having their blood taken?
Absolutely. It's not the most popular thing.
Essentially, Amy Morrison and her coworkers, 120 people in all, are drawing a map of how the dengue virus is spreading. And that same map provides evidence about what measures work best to stop the virus. Their search for solutions has not been easy.
We keep discovering things that turn out to be sort of bad news to the overall goal, which is finding more clever, interesting ways to combat the mosquito or to control the mosquito.
For instance, what they'd really love to find is some hidden key to how the disease spreads. So far, they have not found it. As far as they can tell, mosquito infestations and dengue infections seem to pop up almost randomly in different houses across the city. They're not predictable.
You need to look at all houses. We haven't found grid tools to target particular houses, which again, if you're the head of environmental sanitation and you're trying to combat the disease, it doesn't help you very much.
Recently, the researchers in Iquitos have started to approach this question in a slightly different way. Think about what I've said a few times already, that mosquitoes spread dengue fever. That's actually misleading, because Aedes aegypti mosquitoes really don't travel far. They pretty much stay right in or around one home. Humans, though, humans are amazingly mobile.
The minute you get off the airplane, the city is abuzz with all the motorcycles driving all over the place, and that's how everybody moves around.
Valerie Paz-Soldan is a bicultural social scientist. She's the daughter of a Peruvian mother and a North American father. She was raised in Peru, educated in the United States, and now teaches at a university in Lima. She also collaborates with the dengue research team in Iquitos.
Everyone goes around in moto taxis, which are these rickshaws or these motorcycles adapted to be able to carry two passengers in the back.
They go all over town, of course, so a person may pick up the dengue virus from a mosquito at home, then go visit some cousins and pass it on to a mosquito living there. So the researchers now are trying to gather information not just about where dengue-infected people live, but also where they've been during the previous 2 weeks when they might have picked up the virus. This is the job of the so-called movement team. Shirley Guedes and Jennifer Esther Rios, two of the movement team nurses, have just arrived at a home along a busy street in Iquitos.
This house is where they've detected someone with a high fever.
The research team is waiting for tests to show whether he really had dengue, but just in case, they're starting what they call a cluster investigation, tracing the possible path of infection.
Some of us are going to go to this house, and the others are going to go on to the two houses the man mentioned where he had been.
Shirley Guedes sits down with Jose Navarro and explains what they'd like to do.
As you know, part of our surveillance work involves an important aspect, which is the cluster work. That's when why I came and gave you a questionnaire. You mentioned that you'd been out to your sister's and your mother's house, so we'd like to invite the family to get involved in this important part of the research that we've been doing. So we would like you to ask your relatives to come and be examined as well. And the reason why we do this is because we want to learn more about dengue. We want to know where the mosquito bites people, if it's at home or if it's places where we go to.
Navarro says he's happy to help in any way he can.
As far as I'm concerned, anything to do with health is a good thing. It's all the better. And now, since we're fighting against dengue anyway, they want to take blood and that sort of thing. Fine. All well with me.
If Jose's daughters, sons-in-law, and their children are willing to participate, the nurses will take samples of their blood today and 2 weeks from now to see if they've been exposed to dengue. And if they're infected, the nurses will also ask where they've been over the previous 2 weeks.
Maria Isabel vive acá.
Jose Michel. And as the movement team mines the memories of Jose Navarro, his family, and all the people they visited, a new cluster will take shape, a network of dengue infection on maps back at Amy Morrison's office. On her computer, she shows me one fairly typical cluster.
Here you can see there's six people and three people had evidence of infection in that house that we tested. That's a lot of transmission, but let's look a little further. Let's look where that index case traveled to these three locations.
And okay. People there were infected too?
Exactly.
So the virus basically travels through social networks.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, when you look at something like this, that's the conclusion I would come to.
This is all very interesting, but Valerie Paz-Soldan admits they're still trying to figure out how to use this knowledge to actually step in and prevent the virus from spreading.
Maybe we can find a way to start identifying sites that are super sites for spreading dengue, and we can start intervening in those locations. We have an idea that a lot of residential sites that function as something other than just a home may be key target areas. For example, the house of somebody in a neighborhood who hosts the bingo game every afternoon, or where they have Bible readings at nighttime.
For now, says Amy Morrison, when public health officials want to kill mosquitoes to head off an outbreak of dengue, they have to go house to house all across the city.
They get up at 4 in the morning and start knocking on doors, and it's very quick, go into the house and spray essentially a fog that floats in the air and kills mosquitoes as they're flying through.
And people don't mind that?
Not when it works. People really are almost begging for chemical interventions. People are very happy to have you come in.
But there are other problems. Doing this is quite expensive, and sometimes the city just runs out of money for insecticides. Also, there's a risk that the mosquitoes will develop resistance to the insecticide. That's happened in some other places. And finally, sometimes the equipment doesn't work properly. The droplets are too big, and the fog doesn't stay in the air.
What's really difficult for health departments is they work hard, they're still Aedes aegypti. So they feel like they're not having an effect. In fact, I'm often asked by one of my colleagues in epidemiology, he said, well, you know, the abatisacion isn't doing any good, right? And I say, well, if I look at the data, I think it has done some good. it does make a difference. I mean, I think it has prevented cases and has influenced the transmission patterns that we've seen here. It's just very difficult to say what would have happened if they hadn't done anything else.
Since Amy Morrison's research team has turned the city into a ready-made dengue laboratory, other researchers from all over the world have come here to test their own solutions. They're looking at curtains that are treated with insecticides, chemical repellents, and new kinds of mosquito traps. Nothing's worked perfectly. Sitting in her office with the tropical rains coming down outside, Amy Morrison says after a while, you start taking this fight against the mosquito personally.
I think emotionally it's often the enemy. How does it always, you know, always win? It seems like no matter what we come up with or what we do, she will find a way to survive.
But Morrison says it is feasible to keep their numbers small, and that will reduce the chances of major dengue outbreaks. And if they achieve that, then cases of the deadly version, dengue hemorrhagic fever, should become quite rare.
Here in Iquitos, I've always sort of said, if I were the Minister of Health or I was the Regional Health Director, I would say, we don't want sewer disease, but we can live with dengue.
Morrison has no plans to leave this outpost in Amazonia. From the balcony of her home, she has a beautiful view out over the Nanay River and into the forest beyond.
I have a partner here. I play in a basketball league. I mean, I've made a life here.
But the most important thing that keeps her here, she says, is the research and the research team.
I'm very attached to the personnel. I mean, we've essentially grown old together in a way. And so I think it's loyalty in both directions. And it's wanting to see this whole thing through. I think more than anything, I want to see it through.
Seeing it through may not mean the end of dengue, but it does mean staying long enough to learn everything that this city in Amazonia can possibly teach us about one of humanity's most persistent enemies.
Mosquitoes in Iquitos was produced by Dan Charles and mixed by Jared Weisbrot. Thanks to Rosemary Underhay for translation. The science editor was Barbara Culleton. This program is part of our special series, The World of Viruses, produced with support from SEPA, the Science Education Partnership Award Program at NIH, and the National Center for Research Resources, in collaboration with NET Radio, the Nebraska Center for Virology, and the University of Nebraska. We have a special website set up for our virus programs. Just visit us at soundprint.org and click on our special World of Viruses button. While you're there, make sure to check our new social media links. That's right, you can now like Soundprint on Facebook. Soundprint is produced by the Soundprint Media Center in association with WAMU and American University. You can get in touch with us by email. The address is talkback@soundprint.org. Or you can use Facebook to give us your feedback. Just search for Soundprint Media. CDs of Soundprint are available for a small fee. Just call us toll-free, 1-888-38-TAPES. Soundprint is production assistant Nkechi Mogekwu and audio engineer Jared Weisbrot. Our executive producer is Moira Rankin. I'm Lisa Simeone.